Am I introduced? She is. You are without pretension. You're an incredible woman.
Harlan, on the other hand, let's talk about that, shall we? Shall we talk? Shall we talk? The committee gives him a suit with a little wee short pair of pants, and he's thrilled, but he can't put them on because he says they didn't get his size. It's not a matter of not getting your size. They're giving you a target, a goal for you to, you know. All right.
No opinion on outside issues.
Well, I better do this before I forget. I am Marty, sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
I'm Marty.
I am a member, an active member of my home group, the Lions Group, the Mighty Lions Group in Richmond, British Columbia, which is the southern extremity of Vancouver, Canada, not Washington. And we have a mental health unraveling on a weekly basis. And I just would be so disappointed if you ever came to British Columbia and didn't stop and see our young people. We're so enthusiastic about the way our program's in good hands. I mean, we've got boy man speakers with men buns and all kinds of stuff. That's I got here on Thursday. Harlan's enthusiasm is only outdone by his generosity. I'm telling you, everything here, if you are a person that gets to travel and speak in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is one that everybody wants to come to because of the way you're treated here. The hotel we're in, for example, the towels are so fluffy, I could hardly close my suitcase.
I don't know. I think that, may I have that piece of paper? I think that one of the reasons that you're the caliber of speakers that you've had here up till now at this conference has been, it's been over the moon, right? We started with a woman that, yeah, please. Excellent. We started with Patty. She couldn't keep her clothes on, and the thing went downhill from there. We found out the truth about Al-Anon. I mean, I didn't really understand all of it. I know that they're responsible for a lot of the stuff that goes on in our lives. Like GPS. You know that that's an Al-Anon in your GPS, right? That dead tone, turn left, turn right, turn left. They never get upset. They never talk back. They just recalculate. You know, it's like... But they really, I mean, they showed their hand this weekend. Two aggressive, angry male speakers, and then I finally heard their intro. We're restless, irritable, discontent when we're untreated. They become restless and unreasonable. They're enjoying a level of truth in their program we can only dream about. Right? It's just incredible. Representation of that. It's an amazing program. I have all of the faith in the world in our friends in the Al-Anon program. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's one of those conferences where you kind of can come here and get filled up, and a lot of it takes place in the hallway with the bumping into and rubbing up against and all the other stuff you people are doing. And the food, right? Yeah, rice speakers, food? Yeah. Purge has a whole new meaning to me at the... just because you don't want to quit, you know, you want to keep going. But, you know, again, thank you so very, very much from the very bottom of my heart. My friend Jen, who is a Lions member, was kind enough to drive me down here, and thank you, Jen, for doing that. People often think that she's my wife, but she's incredibly smarter than that. And... she is, a great example of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, so we started the program off with people that couldn't keep their clothes on. We had promiscuity. We had breakup, sickness, death, projectile vomiting as the high note on Saturday night. And now,
Now we're at the Sunday morning spiritual meeting. Somebody said, are you nervous? I said, no, but you should be. I love in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says something that I think is so profound. It says, arrived at this point, so Sunday morning, we have arrived at this point, it says, we are squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck it. It says, some of us have walked a long way over the bridge, a reason toward the desired shore of faith, that the outlines and the promises of that new land brought luster to tired eyes and new courage to flagging spirits, that friendly hands stretched out to welcome us, and that it says that we were grateful that reason had brought us so far, but somehow we just couldn't quite get off the bridge. And then Bill continues and he says, perhaps we've been leaning a little too heavily on reason that last mile, and now we're afraid to lose our support. So it's my job here to take you completely out of any reason that you've had up until this point. Your logic should be gone by the end of this meeting, and you'll be entering the realm of the Spirit, because that's really what we're all after. It's interesting, after this paragraph, which occurs on page 53, some people really have trouble when you start quoting pages and stuff out of the big book, and I always say the same thing to them. You know, it's an interesting reality that Alcoholics Anonymous carried, the message carried from Bill to Dr. Bob back there in 1935 in Akron, Ohio. You know, Bill got Bob and Bill got Bill D, and then they got, like, Bob's son-in-law, and then they got Bob Parkhurst, and then they got Fitz M, and that crazy guy, Jimmy Burwell, and then they didn't get anybody for years. I mean, look in the front of the book, it says, the story of how 100 men and women recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind. This is year 4, right? Your coffee committee's got 100 people on it, for God's sake. It wasn't until they dropped the book in April of 1939 that the thing that we understand to be the program of Alcoholics Anonymous really got to take roots. And so I know that the truth of what I'm trying to learn is in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I've also come to understand after almost 40 years, and by the way, I sobered up, my sobriety date is February the 8th of 1976. Yeah. And yes, you little smart-ass newcomers, there was electricity. Yeah, I know. I used to say when I was 23 years old in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd love to be 40 years sober, but how bad do you have to look to be 40 years sober? Here's your answer. Anyway, so not much was happening in Alcoholics Anonymous in terms of the people being, getting the message of Alcoholics Anonymous until we had some printed literature. And the other thing about it is that I find when I'm coming from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not doing my own stuff. My own opinion will kill you, because I do have opinions. The Al-Anons aren't the only one with a plan. I know they think that. They don't understand counterterrorism, apparently. But we also have a plan, and it's usually fueled by delusions of grandeur and complete disassociation from reality. So Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely filled with bankrupt musicians and philosophers and artists, and all of us would have made it, but we got drunk, and we missed the audition. You know what I mean? The fellowship actually is just absolutely rife with brilliant minds and incredible people. So when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1976, what I'm trying to say to you is, it was a different Alcoholics Anonymous. And what you hear is old farts at the podium pining, oh, I wish we would do it the way we did in the old days. Not me. Because I'm going to tell you something. The spirituality was not the forefront of what we were talking about in 1976. In fact, the big book Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't something they were talking about in 1976. And it was years before I really got into the book. And you go into that book, and it's kind of interesting how it scopes out. It starts with the prefaces, and then there's up to 4 forewords, and then there's a thing called the doctor's opinion. opinion. And then it starts and it goes, Bill's story, there is a solution. More about alcoholism, we agnostics, how it works, and then into action. And what's interesting is up till there, all we've done in those first 88 pages up until the middle of the Into Action chapter, all we've done is become convinced that we are going to die if we don't stop drinking. There's no program. And then from the middle of that chapter, which is chapter 5, the next chapter is working with others. Some of you guys that are around the girls, it's working with others, not working on others. It's working with others. So that in that chapter, in from there until the end of that chapter, we do steps 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And then we end up in working with others, chapter 12. And then the book continues on with the two wives, employers, and a vision for you. And so it's small wonder that in 1976, we hadn't had a bunch of stuff yet revealed. Sort of like what I like to call the white spaces between the lines in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The spiritual stuff that I see at meetings. Have you ever wondered why you go to a meeting and you don't hear anything? You don't like anything that's going on in the meeting? And you get out in the car and you feel better? You know, I really believe that what's going on is a two-level thing. There's the eyeball and all the intellect stuff that's going on. And then there's a healing that's going on at the gut level that you're many times not even aware is taking place. And it's that healing, in my experience, is the thing that gives me the insights, that gives me those moments that I'm going to need down the road in order to live life on life's terms. Because unlike many of you, when I got sober, life did not straighten up. I went into a tumble of self-will. And I was from, age 23. By the time I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I was in business. I was making a lot of money. I was completely self-obsessed. I was speaking all over the world. And really what I did was I lost touch with the spiritual side of Alcoholics Anonymous. People say, well, there is no spiritual side. Oh, yeah, there is. Oh, yes, there is. Because the humility to learn how to hear in those meetings, the music that is Alcoholics Anonymous, is only possible through the spiritual side. What's really interesting is when I get into my physical self and I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's those same people telling those same stories, and then the newcomer whiners. That's what's at the meeting, and then they pass the hat, and I'm thinking Starbucks or AA. And I got to tell you, in those days, Starbucks would win out. And I didn't understand that spirituality and money meet in the hat of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's that ability to give back what was God's anyway, like you're not giving him anything he didn't already possess just for your own information. You're just giving him back. I told my kid one time, about 10%. He said, that's not bad. He lets you keep 90 and you give back 10. That's not bad. This guy's a mathematician. Makes sense to him. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, what we get is, you know, really short arms and really deep pockets. And we start to, you know, get physical in our approach to how we're handling the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I want to tell you how it happened that I got to the program, because it doesn't matter what it was like. It was like that because of how I was. And how I was from an early age, probably around 11, as early as I can remember, absolutely convinced there was no hope. If you're new in the room tonight, what I want to tell you for absolute for sure is that you will never get anything if you think you're going to die tomorrow or you're hoping you are. You've got to have a longer-term plan before you'll do any steps. You've got to decide that you're going to stick around for a while. So decide to live for the next 6 months. That's a good start. You know, the thing about my drinking was I was always going to, I'm not going to live anyway, nothing good's ever going to happen to me, and so it kind of justified all of the crap behavior that I was doing in this life. That started at 11. I hadn't had a drink yet. I needed a drink, but I hadn't had a drink, and what I used to watch was my family. This is, in my opinion now, something that God sends you to aggravate you. There is nothing in the world more aggravating than normie people when you're an alcoholic child. Now, I had two uncles. I had an uncle that used to get drunk, and one eye would close, Sammy, and he Uncle Sammy used to get drunk, and then he'd talk about his time in the Canadian Navy. And it was fun, except Sammy was never in the Canadian Navy. Sammy was a decorated Canadian infantry hero, but when he'd get drunk, that wasn't good enough. He had to bumper up to where he was on the big ships. Alcoholics will lie about anything just to try and embellish the fact that they think whatever they've done really isn't worth very much. Then I had Uncle Stan. Uncle Stan had a lot of money, and he looked like he was constipated all the time. He's kind of... I always want to say, let her go, Stan. Please let her go. And Stan had been sober since 1942 in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. If you want what we have, try, you know. And so my impression was Uncle Sam, the drunk, was a hell of a lot more fun than Uncle Stan, the constipated, critical guy. And it was interesting that I started my drinking, as many of you did, in a bathroom and with a kid, and his dad had finished building a house. They had brought in a whole bunch of Loganberry wine. Did you ever drink that stuff? It's a designer drug from the 60s, yes. Goes down purple, comes up pink. It's amazing when you're 11. And I was in the bathroom with that kid, and I had a number of things happen to me. You know, it says in the book that we are suffering from a self-imposed, we were crushed, it says, by a self-imposed crisis. A crisis we could neither avoid or evade. And you know this is true if you're an alcoholic of my variety, right? Because the consequences just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I mean, by the end of your drinking, all you have to do is get up in the morning and you're in crisis, right? And they know where you are. You know that for sure. So when I look at my childhood and I look at the things that were happening to me, I was already being crushed by a self-imposed crisis, because guess what? Self-imposed crises do not connote what we're doing when we're drinking. That's not the self-imposed part of it. And I get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they said, you know, I can't say that you're alcoholic, except that you're going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, why the hell would you be going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous if you're not alcoholic? I mean, it's a good point. But I needed to know, so I said, you know, can't you take me somewhere to meet a professional, not just some idiot that saved their lives in Alcoholics Anonymous? That's not even interesting. Take me somewhere where they have, you know, some university degree or something, and they can tell me what's wrong. So they took me to a guy named Bob. And Bob said, what do you want to know? And I said, I want to know exactly what's wrong with me, because I had had this experience driving my car where I was 9 months sober, and it had come upon me like a big spider on my face, that I was alcoholic, that it was progressive, that I was going to die, and that there was no hope. It was just like, for in 1 second, God pulled the magic blanket off, and I saw it. Oh, my God. So I go to this Bob, and I say, can you tell me exactly what's wrong with me? He said, you have a biochemical genetic disorder centered in the hypothalamic information control center of your brain, which is made worse by your liver's inability to metabolize alcohol without producing acetaldehyde, which mixed with dopamine produces tetrahydroisoquinoline, and that's a nasty combination given your narcissistic, egocentric core, which is driven at times by feelings of omnipotence, which tend to their own integrity despite the cognitive dissonance and stimulus augmentation. I said, what does that mean, Bob? He said, it means that you can't drink alcohol and you're an asshole when you're sober. Go to a meeting. Yeah. Later on, I found out that Bob was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just was a really smart guy, and they planted him. They did these kinds of things to me. I don't know if you had sponsorship like I had sponsorship. I thought my sponsor called himself Dwayne for almost 15 years before the Hollywood took up and did his story, and they did it in a series, and then I recognized, oh, my God, that's Dwayne. The movie was called Shrek. And there are some of you in this room know Shrek, and you know I'm not exaggerating, and he actually now wears a name tag that says Shrek on it. So I'm not offending him. He says Shrek had a jackass, didn't he? And so here's the thing about Shrek. He was a sponsor. You know, a good parent is somebody that understands you not only have to be friendly with your kids, but you have to understand you're not your kid's friend. There was always some sort of a chasm between Dwayne and I, where he was my buddy. We were doing, like horrendous construction problems, projects, you know, wrecking each other's lower parts of our houses and building fences and doing stuff just to keep busy. And then there was this other part of him that was very brick wall about sponsorship. Now, I didn't invite Dwayne into my life. Here's further proof that this whole notion, what I call fellowship speak, is wrong. It's not a matter of when they want it or if they want it or don't waste your time till they want it. I didn't want it. I didn't even know what it was. I just didn't want Dwayne to come to the house anymore. That was the only thing I was praying for. I mean, my sister, I have this sister, she's a meddler. Do you know what that is? Like, my brother Michael is alcoholic. My brother Paul is alcoholic. I'm alcoholic, respectable disorders, and she's a meddler. And she will just get into your business without any provocation whatsoever and just turn your life upside down. And so she phoned Alcoholics Anonymous, not me. I had just come off yet another terrible tear. I was in the room with the blackout stuff that goes on. I don't know about you, but I don't stay in blackouts. I tend to come in and out of blackouts. Oh my God, oh my God. And I wake up and I'm on the horse in front of Kmart, you know. I just know that Uncle Stan would not approve of this kind of behavior, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I wake up and I'm in a tree outside of City Hospital in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and I'm screaming at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, at the patients, wake up, you know? Why? I don't know, but I'd come to and I'd go, oh, man. And then you kind of like just slither wherever you are. And I woke up in the morning and I had all of these things. I had the four horsemen going across the bed, the terror, the bewilderment, all of that stuff happening to me. Like it happened so many mornings. And yet, you know, if you're an alcoholic of my variety, what you don't understand is that when I drink and I ingest alcohol into my body, it has a far deeper chemical reaction than I even understood. That it actually distorts the little energy cells that are in my body. The mitochondria are stretched and distorted. And then what happens to somebody like me is these cells now want alcohol. They don't want food anymore. Food's too hard to process. These are lazy alcoholic cells. They just give me that damn ethanol. And so when I stop drinking, these things start going into starvation mode, and all I know is that I am restless, and I need another drink, and I need it now. And so it didn't matter that I sincerely, day in and day out, told the people that I loved, I'm done. I won't do that anymore. I really meant it. The morning that I woke up, the last morning that I woke up drunk, the night before I had been in a big crisis drunk, and I had gone to work that day, and I had made a deal with God that day. In my room, I had said, if you could get me out of this, I swear I will never drink again. I know you're waiting for me. I will become a missionary. I know you need me. And when I got to work, as happens with alcoholics everywhere, all of the stuff started to resolve. You know what I mean? I saw the guy that was chasing me the night before with a gun. They were taking out in handcuffs. And then that girl, you know, I knew that there were... One of the times I woke up, there was a girl with her top off, and it wasn't home because those weren't ours. They were different, and so but I didn't know who I was with or what had happened. Apparently, it was, I don't know what happened. All I know is there was a car chase, and then it was morning. Swear to God, never drink again. Go to work. Everything resolves. 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm getting off my shift. I'm a drive show announcer at a radio station in those days. I think, oh my God, I've had the most stressful day. See, and I don't have any tools. I don't have a sponsor to call. I don't have it. All I've got is this one sort of track in my head. It's called a beta-phos marker. And what it says is, here's the routine. You got to get this going again, and you're going to be okay. So I start thinking, I need a drink, but I realize that I've made a divine, sacred commitment to God not to drink. That's when the alcoholic genius mind cuts in. Now, here's something you'll never hear in an Al-Anon talk about the genius mind of the alcoholic, but my mind went like this. Jesus Christ's first miracle was in Capernaum, and he went to a wedding, and they didn't have any wine, and he turned water into wine. Jesus Christ wants me to drink wine. Yes! And by the time that you're out of trouble, you know you've overreacted anyway. So I go across, I have two drinks of Kiafa and 7-Up, which they call in Canada porch climber. And the next thing I know, I'm thinking to myself, there is nobody that can tell me I can drink or I can't drink. So fill the table with beer and call the police. Because this is on. And then I wake up, and it's the phone ringing, and it's her, the meddler. And then she's got the question. Do you know the question I mean? Like, it's like they go to Al-Anon question school. And these are probing questions, deep, insightful, probing questions. I say, hello? She said, how are you? What does she know? She wouldn't ask that unless she knew, like, she's got information or she saw something. I'm okay. Why? You know what I'm saying? And she says, look, do you think you have a drinking problem? I said, no. I can drink anybody I know under the table. There's one thing I have no problem with. It's drinking. And that's when she phoned Shrek. And she sent him over to the house. And I couldn't believe it. It was like a 6'5" Norwegian guy with a brush cut. Now, my father-in-law was Norwegian, and I hated him because when I would go and pick Shirley up or drop her off, he'd swear at me in Norwegian, you know. You know. Get kind of cramps in your crotch with the, you know. So I thought, this is what I need, is a 6'5" Norwegian baboon. That's exactly what I need, with a brush cut in a 1976 Ford LTD car, Robin Eggs blue. And those weren't cars. Those were land cruisers. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't park them. You docked them, baby. They just... You could lose contact with other people in the car. That's how big that car was. And Shrek takes me to the A&W. on our first date, and he says, when I used to drink, he says, now, again, going back to the book, there's a chapter called Working with Others in which it tells us that, you know, sometimes you'll get a guy and he doesn't really understand that he's alcoholic, and he really doesn't want to talk about being alcoholic, and tell him a few humorous stories out of your past. And so Shrek starts telling me, he's, you know, I got really drunk one time and I broke a train in half, and because I wanted to get to the liquor store, and I thought, really? So I would tell him something worse, and then he'd tell me something worse, and worse, worse, worse. So I finished my fifth step, and I really believe that if you told somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous you made love to a zebra, they would say, well, at least the one you had was a female. You know, I mean, there is nothing you could do that somebody couldn't do something worse in Alcoholics Anonymous. At the end of all of this, he says, and this is what I call the alcoholic close. If there was a course on 12-stepping, they would say, here's the close. He said, boy, it sounds like you get in a lot of trouble when you drink, and you don't get in a lot of trouble when you're not drinking. I thought to myself, I am going to kill my sister. Because if you're an alcoholic of my variety, you're not exactly firing on all cylinders. Well, in fact, the connections are basically between resentment, hate, getting even, and getting away. This is all every beta faucet marker in your head has only those routines. And so I went away from Shrek. And I said, I know. He said, yeah, well, why don't you just stop drinking? I thought, oh, man. And he knows where I live, and he's got half of the story. Now what am I going to do? He says, I'll pick you up for a meeting in the morning. I said, what kind of a meeting? He said, it's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll pick you up at 9 o'clock. So I said, okay, I left the house at 8. He's out front waiting for me. And he says to me, you know, every once in a while, a newcomer will try to escape on you. So you just remember when you start out, you got to kind of get there a little early for them because they can bolt. You know, I'm thinking. He takes me to a meeting, average age at the meeting, dead. And they're going up something they called stairs. There was 12 stairs. Somebody was stuck on the 5th stair, and this was causing a lot of panic in the room about this 5th stair. And they were drinking coffee like perhaps they were never going to have coffee on earth ever again. And the other thing is they never pee. But they don't. They just guzzle, 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 talk, 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 talk. And then one of the old ones says, you know, if you want what we have. Wrinkles and, you know, the average age of the room was probably, looking back on it, 40. You have no idea how old you look to a 20-year-old when you're 40. I mean, these guys looked like they'd been sent out to be wrinkled. I'm not kidding you. It was like, he said, if you want what we have, you got to be willing to go to any length to get it, or you're going to end up in a mental institution or dead. And I'm thinking, I'll take dead. Because I've been in mental institutions. I do not want to go back to any mental institutions. And again, I can't overemphasize, one of the killing features of alcoholism is the hopelessness. It is a hopeless, helpless state of mind. It's not real. It is a hopeless, helpless state of mind. And then it's hooked into the other part of the disease, which makes it such a winner and kept it so hidden for so many years. So we have the physical abnormality where we process alcohol different than our fellows. We don't know that. You're sitting beside somebody who's non-alcoholic. They're drinking. They get up, go home. You think, wow, when I grow up, I want to be like that. They don't have something in their head saying, have another one, have another one, have another one, have another one. You know, they don't have it. They drink until the volume in their head goes down a little bit or it starts to get a little fuzzy. They are the absolute opposite of what I'm experiencing. With me, I'm drinking and the volume's going up and the color is coming into people's faces. The blonde over there just grew a full set of teeth. I know she loves me. I'm going there. They start feeling like they're losing the moment. You know, like they feel a little numb. And so what happens is they stop drinking, and all of the cells that are in their body, which are not distorted, are not running on ethanol, are not converted to another way of processing alcohol that makes it about 12 times faster for us to burn alcohol than them, which is why, by the way, if you're a male, this may mystify if you're female, but when you're a male, you start out peeing yellow, and by, you know, the third, fourth hour, you pee nothing but clear white water. That's only your life's energy going out of you. Do not worry about that. That's it looks very sanitary. So what also is happening to you is over on the other side of what they call the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous, that our lives have become unmanageable because I am now also exhibiting addiction. This is why it always seems like it's from the Department of Redundancy Department when people say I'm an alcoholic addict. Silkworth says that in the doctor's opinion, the alcoholic addictions. Of course it is. Because we are addicted to the ride. See, if you have an alcoholic mind of my variety, the dopamine in your brain mixes with the adrenaline, then mixes with a thing called norepinephrine, oxytocin, and then finishes up in a cocktail of serotonin. So that goes like this. Oh, ah, oh. And you start to emit words like, dude. You know, it's, oh, man. And then what happens is that cycle has to repeat because once you drop out the bottom of the serotonin, you got to go back up and do that again. So my brain is also an addictive nature brain. And I have these FOSS markers all over my brain that says when you, this happens, do this. And then there's this little routine. And the, so now back in 1939, they didn't know any of this. They didn't even know there were women in 1939. All you have to do is read the book. Everything, it's all men. By the way, they were going to call the book The First 100 Men. And then Florence sobered up, Bloody Florence. And now they're going to have to call it 100 Men and 1 Woman. So it should say with The First 100 Men and Woman that sobered up. But anyway, so Alcoholics Anonymous has this whole thing that they developed that they call in cognitive medicine in 2017. They call this neuroplasticity. Isn't that impressive? You've had neuroplasticity happen in your brain in which these routines, these beta FOSS markers, have been removed and you don't have them anymore. You don't have them anymore. People say, if I could take a pill and I could drink again, and I go, there's no routine. I don't want to drink again. I don't like what it does to people. I think the beer label should have a warning. May cause slow dancing. You know what I mean? That was the other thing about these guys at the meeting. The stuff that they found funny wasn't funny, like peeing your pants. Somebody would talk about peeing their pants. They would go hysterical. And I'd say, well, you know, that's only funny if you've stopped doing it. And then they would cry in the good part. Somebody's family would come back, and they'd be in tears. I just thought, man, these people are like wacko. I didn't understand. I had this brain that, a body that said, gimme, 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 the cells that were saying, you need some of this. I need fuel. Depending on how alcoholic you become, there's even more of these. Now, there is a thing in cellular structure, apparently, where cells actually commit suicide, and these things come out of you. And after a period of time, if you're new in the room, I've got some really good news for you. That whole thing stops. I just can't tell you when. But you will have a day where you go, oh, my God, I haven't thought about that for a week or 2 weeks or maybe 4 months. It just kind of like the big book says, it drops away. In the sneaky promises that we've got, right? Written by a lawyer, sneaky promises like the fear of people and financial insecurity will leave you. It doesn't say you're ever going to have any money or like anybody, but just the fear of the financial insecurity. So what happens to me is I'm 23 years old. I haven't been in broadcasting since 1978. People always ask me if I did that, but no, I actually ended up being a publisher and I built a franchise. I've done stuff, the most exciting life that you can possibly imagine. I had a ranch and raised and raced thoroughbred racehorses. You know, I've been all over the world building corporations and doing things. And why? Because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's no other reason. And what happens in the spiritual sense in Alcoholics Anonymous is that racing brain, that disconnected system wants to say, me, I'm doing it. This thing that I call Marty Jeffrey, this 200-pound, beautifully follicled, Paul Newman-looking individual. So that's 40 years, you know, delusion doesn't leave, right? So what I know is that all that I am and all that I will ever be is the direct result of the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just, when I talk about the spiritual part of Alcoholics Anonymous, it is the principle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, like one of the exercises I have people do when I go through steps is I say, in step two, I need you to write 7 aspects of God. So we had an example yesterday with the kid with the hair antenna. It was so interesting because he built this incredible case, very articulate speaker, and he built this incredible case for why he almost had to leave this safe house because they were going to get him to do something religious, play Santa Claus. And you've got to say to yourself, like, Santa Claus is not religious, is it? Santa Claus was actually created by a guy named Hannon for the Coca-Cola company in 1931. He went to that book The Night Before Christmas and he drew what he thought it looked like and he made it look like him, and that's Santa Claus. So, but in Jason's mind, Santa Claus, Christmas, Christmas, Jesus, Jesus, God, bad, me, not going, won't do Santa, not doing Santa. These leaps that are in our brain, they're all through our brains. Like this slogan here, I mean, my big thing was I had a real thing against God when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous because I'd been thrown out of the United Church as a child for selling condoms. Who wants to worship a condom-hating God? You see what I'm saying? And then you see it here, it says, see, T-O-G-E-T, to get her, wear one.
Yeah.
That's the kind of deep insights you're getting this morning. I believe that what we have to do is reframe. The only reason God is such a good word is because it's so short, G-O-D. It can mean anything. And I also struggled with the higher power concept because a higher power, I can go over the higher power every once in a while. I have found after these years of sobriety, I need a highest power, that when it's decided, it's decided. And I have had to learn that in cognitive therapy, in the reformation of the brain, in this neuroplasticity, how they do it is through repetition. Repetition. So you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they say 90 meetings in 90 minutes, and read your book, and sit on the potty sideways, and do this, and do that, and do this, and do. And the reason they're doing that is because they're helping you develop new patterns that will form new little routines inside your head. You only have to go to the meeting you hate until you don't hate the meeting anymore. This will happen to you. See, the problem with the non-spiritual part of Alcoholics Anonymous is that, as it says in the book, crushed by a self-imposed crisis. And then Bill goes on in the next page to speak yet another of these incredible AA paradox, in which he says, our faith in our ability to reason is why we can't believe in faith. It's insane. But we have such veneration for how we think and what we think is right that we can't hear anything else. In Greek, they call it a skatoma. We're partially blind to things because we think something else. The genius of the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, gathering 30, 40, or 100 people in a room and they can't talk. They have to just listen to what that other ass is saying. What happens is that when you're in those meetings against your will, like it or not, your mind is being reprogrammed. You learn how to think in a different way. Suddenly, ideas that you've had for years and years and years are gone. You are free of the bondage of self. And that self is nothing more than this whole notion about looking at me. I used to think, I'm not selfish, I hate me too much. You got to really focus to stay hating yourself all the time. I mean, you got to really think about stuff and know that your face is uglier than everybody else's, and it's competitive. It's you got to be busy at that self-hatred stuff all the time. And the whining, and I mean, it's exhausting. What happens in Alcoholics Anonymous when you start to have these changes that are going on in your life and you start to move into what they call the fourth dimension? Do you know what that is? Height, depth, width, time. That's the fourth dimension. So what we're doing in the fourth dimension is we're living right in this moment. And as I sat there at the start of this meeting feeling completely incompetent, like I do every single time I ever come to a podium, and I think, oh my God, please Jesus, don't let me hurt these guys. I'm sitting there and I'm looking at you, and all of a sudden I have this incredible, because what's really interesting is there's a voice that talks to my voice, and I hear that and hear it say, hey, you're present. You can see everybody in this room in real time. You're actually in this room right now. This is going to happen. It was just like the most incredible one moment in my life that I will always remember. And, you know, life is not just in once you're into Alcoholics Anonymous and you start doing the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I admit I'm powerless over alcohol. Look what I just told you about all that chemical stuff. Like, yes, you are. And my life's become unmanageable. Well, I'm addictive behavior. There's nothing I can't addict to. I mean, I can go to gamble, and I love winning because I get all that norepinephrine, and then I start to love losing because it gives me all the norepinephrine. You know, I'm going to stay till I'm broke because I love it. You know what I'm saying? But if I ever win, I'm going to walk away. No, you're not, because it's just like that. And it's like that in relationships, and it's like that, like the pornography industry that's taking place right now all around this addiction thing. It's really interesting because it has absolutely nothing to do with love or sex. It's all to do with this addictive cycle that we have in our brain. So if I don't separate those two things, I will get confused with the idea of sobriety and sanity. You can't get sane without sobriety, I promise you that. But being sober will not guarantee being sane. I come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says you are powerless over alcohol. Yes. You are powerless over the ability to run your own life. Yes. You have got to turn your life and your will to the care of God. Who is this God? Santa Claus? No. Sky Fairy with a bad attitude? Not good enough. So what I do is I get my people to sit down. And we write out some aspects of God. For example, my God is principled. Principled means doesn't change. Same for you, same for me. It's like the rules on earth, gravity. You're cute, go to the edge of a building, walk off, you're just as dead as if you weren't cute. Doesn't matter. Gravity's gravity. Also true in the spiritual world. Got a resentment? You will cut yourself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Been sober 22 years? Don't care. That's the law. So I have to just understand that, and I have to understand that as I'm staying here sober as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, that my alcoholism has continued to rise and that I've got to keep amping my spiritual condition up lest the alcoholism poke its ugly little head above. And then it tells me things like, you don't need to go to meetings anymore. You already know everything. And then my God side says, that's why you need to go to meetings. You need to go and hear what you don't know. Because it isn't what you don't know you don't know. It's what you don't know that will kill you. And I go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous like this wonderful weekend, and I heard all these people. And again, I had my soul and my spirit and my mind refreshed to come out another time and to be able to go back among the earth people and act like one of them, which is amazing. Because they have no idea what I'm thinking about what I'd like to do to most of them. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program in which we do an inventory. What are we inventorying? You know, I hear these people are writing "Gone with the Wind." Like, you know, if you're going over about 19 lines in any particular subject, what I find is the person you're going to do your step five with will never follow it. So I just want to be, I'm inconsiderate, I'm dishonest, I did this, I did that. What I found out, you know, through Alcoholics Anonymous and through you people in Alcoholics Anonymous is I did not have a passing, nodding understanding of what the word dishonest even meant. I thought it was to do with stealing and lying, and that gave me a room pass to do all the other things, like judge you, like get on the freeway and be mad at the way everybody else was driving, forgetting that I drive like an ass most of the time. You know, watching the newcomers in Alcoholics Anonymous drone on and on and on and on, forgetting when I was a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, I droned on and on and on and on. Dishonesty is about not being able to admit to my innermost self that I have these things going on. That's what real dishonesty is about. And this whole notion around inconsideration. One of the greatest defects of character I have is just I will never hurt you purposely. But I will hurt you because I just don't think about you. Or I don't think about what my behavior is going to do, how it's going to impact you. And I go through my life, and my life is shot through with this stuff. It's no wonder that people reacted to me the way that people reacted to me. It's no wonder I was incapable of having and maintaining any sort of a relationship that had any depth. Because there's nothing, you can take 5 years to build a relationship and burn that baby to the ground in 5 minutes of inconsideration and selfish behavior. And so I go into that step four, and all I'm looking for is I'm going to go in there and I'm going to go on to the other side of the table and I'm going to say, because it says look at it from a completely different angle, I'm going to say, if I was the other person dealing with me in this situation, how would I act? And oh my God, all of a sudden my father who had beaten me up, and I used to do this in every step four, my father physically abused me. And then when I got around the other side of the table and I remembered what happened, I'm out drinking with my buddies, I'm 18 years old, somebody beat their dad up, I thought, that's a hell of a good idea. And so I'd say, take me home. They'd drive, I say, just hang on, I go in the house, tell my dad to stand up, punch him in the face. Then he beat me up. Jack Gaines, could you go to the back of the room? The devil will do anything to distract you from this talk. So, what happened was that all of a sudden I went around the other side of the table and I saw the hundreds of things that this man, Irish guy, not a great hugger or lover kind of a guy, not great, not articulate, not a businessman, not a lot of things, and I had a lot of trouble relating to him. But my God, when I saw the number of times that he outreached to me and I just walked away from him. The problem in that relationship was not my father. And you might say, well, that's awful. I mean, you can't fix it. Yeah, but I'm not victimized by it anymore either. And I can honestly tell you that everything in my life turned out like that when I started to apply the actual defects of character, four of them, selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and frightened. That's, you can put lists and lists of subcategories there, but those are the things that were driving me into the ground. And then I go and I do this step five. Now, I mean, the first step five I did was with a minister, and I went in and I thought, you know, I'll just distract this guy because that's what we do. I said, what do you think about that Adam and Eve story? Do you think that was real or myth? He said, do you think I'm an idiot? I said, I don't know what you mean. He said, I know what you're trying to do, you little drunk. They forgot to tell me he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see what I'm saying? If you're doing your fifth step with somebody that you can con, somebody you can get around, somebody that won't ask the hard question, don't waste your time. You will not learn a thing. I could not tell you the number of fifth steps I have now done where we've gone through things and we've talked about the inconsideration, we've talked about that, and right at the very end of 2 hours or 5 hours or in one case 21 hours, the person said, oh my God, I've got to now tell you this thing. And I watched them reborn in front of my very eyes. I saw them take on a new life. I saw everything change in that moment. And I walked away thinking, Jesus, please don't make me remember that. Please, please not. You know, but it's true, when you do fifth steps, you don't remember a lot of what you're told. Would you agree with that? So then you come to steps 6 and 7. Now, again, this book was written in 1939. It was written over a couple of months. It was written around a book called The Common Sense of Drinking. It was an incredible text. It's from God. I have absolutely no idea. But spiritual, not so much. Not yet. 12 lines in the entire book on steps 6 and 7. Two of the most powerful steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason is because of the neural pathways, because of all of the problems that I've had in my brain, sometimes I can't want to let go of things because I think that I need them. I think that they are the solution rather than the fact that they cause more problems than they are solution. And so what I've done in step 6 is I say, I am wanting to be entirely ready to have you, God, you, not me, you, God, you, remove these things from me. I hope I'm making my point. It's sort of like I cannot remove these things any more than I can give myself an appendectomy. I cannot get this stuff because my head goes back to those behaviors and back to those behaviors. And so I ask God, please, Let me see the truth of this. Let me not want to do this anymore. And then I'm prepared for step seven. Alcoholics Anonymous is kind of like, it's always a preparation step before the step. It's sort of like going in the bathroom as a man and undoing your fly before you pee. It's just a good idea. Girls, pull them down before you sit. It's just like 6-7. 6-7. Step eight, I can't tell you the number of times that I've done. I do step eights with my people. I say, tell me who you're thinking of making amends to. It's comedy. It is like, are you kidding? This is all nothing. When are you going to go do this one? You know. Okay, let's go to step three. And what you find is that if you don't do timetable, I don't lose people in step four. I don't. I lose people in step eight and nine. That's where they wander away on me. When you really get down to the business of what this is, Alcoholics Anonymous is an amend program, not an apology program. We're not a bunch of obsequious, ass-kissing, I'm so sorry for what I did people anymore. We're God's kids. We walk up to you and say, here's what happened. Here's what I did. Here's what I'm thinking I can do about that. Is there anything else that I need to make an amend to get everything straight with you? I don't want to go in and ask somebody to forgive me. I don't want to give them that kind of power or responsibility or put it on them. I'm not doing that. I go in and I say, this is what I did. This is what I'm going to do about it. And that works. And then that step 10, the most, I'm telling you, I was 28 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous before I discovered step 10. 28 years, and then I went away from the program for 2 years, didn't go to meetings, didn't drink. Insane. It's like losing your compass in the middle of a forest. You don't know up from down, right from wrong, and you've got nowhere to go. And so I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous with absolutely no program, and I realized that my problem was I was not doing a daily review. I was not doing a daily review because I couldn't stand the results of what I was seeing in the daily review. I was so critical. My inner critic, my little Mr. Perfect inside, all I would do is beat on me, so I became step 10 resistant. But that's not what it says. It says we do a constructive review. It also appears in the instructions for step 11, because this is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And what it says is that I review, have I been selfish? Have I been, you know, inconsiderate? Have I been frightened? And I look at those things. Do I owe anybody an amend on this day? What could I have done better? And then it says that spiritual thing that we forget all the time. Ask God to help you in what you're going to plan to do. So I'm this guy, I can't do step 10 at night because recovery has given me this incredible ability to, I don't know whether the light goes out of the room before I go to sleep or after, because as soon as it's dark, I'm gone. It's morning. What a gift, right? So doing step 10 at night is not possible for me. I do my step 10 in the morning, and I follow a little routine. I do my step 10, and then I immediately do my step 11. It seems logical to me. What didn't I do right yesterday? What can I do better today? What actions do I have to take? Now, this is the blueprint. This is not getting up and running from the seat of your pants all day again and then wondering why you're not feeling any better. This is the spiritual part. Spiritual doesn't mean God stuff. Spiritual means you can't see it. It's just hidden. It's like outer space. When was the last time you were looking around out there? Do you believe that it's there? You've seen pictures, yes. But I mean, the reality of these spiritual things is you will never know them until you do them. And you will never form a habit doing something until you do it around, well, they say 27 days, but I know in Alcoholics Anonymous, for most of us, it's closer to 90. I got to do something 90 continuous times, and then all of a sudden I find myself wanting to do that thing. And that's the truth for steps 10 and 11. This is where I meet God, and I say to him, tell me. Here's what it says in the book, par. P-A-R. Pause, ask, and remind yourself that God is running the show. There is nothing more powerful than this. Whatever you're doing, whoever's hassling you, pause, ask for help, ask for an intuitive thought or a direction, and then remind yourself that God's running the show. I promise you, the stress will greatly diminish, if not go right out of your life. And then I go to step 11. This is the one everybody sees as the big spiritual step, because we continue to improve our conscious contact. What does that mean exactly, conscious contact? I believe when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous and it says that we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, yes, it's me and everybody else in the room. Yes, it's everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's also all the idiots that are in my head. There's a whole we in there that all have to admit that Marty is alcoholic at the innermost self. Page 30 in the book, look at it. It says you have to admit to your innermost, should say, selves. And in the 11th step, I'm taking the committee, and I'm taking, in my way of looking at it, there's your conscious mind, there's your subconscious mind, and then there's your unconscious mind. The unconscious mind is an absolute storehouse of poo-poo and crap from your entire life, and a whole bunch of really good routines like how your heart beats and how you heal. The subconscious mind seeks stuff out of there all the time. And so if you've got a guy on the third floor that's an idiot, and every time you ask for something, it puts up a package that's negative, you're going to have a whole bunch of crazy stuff going on in your life. Steps 4, 5, 6, 7, weed out all of those bad boxes that are in there, all of those tapes that play, all that stuff disappears. You can come to peace within yourself. You can close your eyes, and you can be quiet with yourself because all of those tapes and everything are no longer playing. That's step 11. And then it says, you know, you've had a spiritual awakening, a consciousness that has now come to you as the result of doing the steps. Now, practice the principles, love, honesty, tolerance, patience. Practice these principles, steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 through 12. Practice these principles daily in all of your affairs. Here's the key. That drove me out of Alcoholics Anonymous at 28 years sober, and it's all to do with logic. I had my life compartmentalized. I had Alcoholics Anonymous, I had family, mistress, bank account, second mistress. You know, it was just a bloody mess. I lost a 31-year marriage over that behavior. All I can tell you is this, that Alcoholics Anonymous says to me, if you want to be treated principled, become principled. It's not about what they're doing to you. It's what you're doing, period. I do not have to respond and react to every little wave that comes across my deck. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the ability to just be. And that is the greatest gift that any of us could ever possess. So Harlan and Zan, God bless you guys for all you do. This committee, which remains anonymous so much of the time, this is a premier conference. Everybody says it. There's something here. I don't know what it is, but I beg you to keep it close and keep feeding it, because there's just spirit all over this room. Thank you. God bless.